Right now, it is time to bring in Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack. You can find them at tqag.com, and let's vote for them today. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning from Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio.
Ohio.
Now, Greg, you sound like you have a cold.
No, I just had my morning sneezing fit just before I clicked in. I thought it was going to happen. I thought it was going to happen while I was on the air, but I kind of forced it to happen ahead of time.
All right. Well, I'm glad
We're at 78 going up to 84 today.
Not too bad. Not too shabby.
That's good. Yeah, we're 40 here in Columbus. And going to 55 or 57.
So you're Columbus is like us today.
Yes. Yes.
And why are you in Columbus again?
We are doing an estate appraisal, so I have a number of my team coming in to go through this estate. It's a rather large estate, and there's a lot of items. So let's just think hoarders, but not to that extent.
Now, when you say a lot, for people listening, your team, it's not a team that's together all the time. It's a team that changes whatever different type of auction you have because there's different needs, right?
For different types of appraisals around the country. So depending on what's there, there's a number of artwork pieces, but there's also collectibles. So I would typically do the artwork and the collectibles, but because there's so much of both, I'm bringing in our art appraiser from Chicago. So she will be here, and we will go through together. And I also have my assistant and junior appraiser, Margaret, who is going to do the furniture and furnishings, because it looks like it's all just residential contents types of items. So she'll be able to do that, and I'll be overseeing that. So it's every job, we have a different group of people. So it just depends on what's there and where it's located.
All right. And Greg, you're just going to take it easy there in Florida, huh?
No, actually, no. I'm still trying to finish up with the construction project, trying to get everything finished before that and taken care of before the holidays. So, and actually, just before I clicked in, also I'm dealing with a client locally here who thinks that the furniture that she inherited from her grandparents, which was made in New York in the 1930s, is worth $1 million. Well, not a million, but $999,000. So I've been trying to, you know, that old saying, no good deed shall go unpunished. I was trying to help somebody, and now I can't get them off my back because they believe that what they have is very valuable. So I don't know what else to say other than it's just used furniture. So,
well, you know, well, valuable is a different thing. It's like I found out with you guys with my mother's house. She had beautiful pieces of furniture that aren't made now. Really beautiful glass dining room set, living room set, tables that go with it. It was absolutely gorgeous. And my brother wanted appraised, and you guys said, well, you know, it's nice stuff, but. And I told my brother, and he goes, you know, that's about what it would cost to replace it with normal furniture. But, you know, if you've got something that's extra special to you, keep it. Because, you know, it's not going to be extra special unless it truly is a classic. Yes. When it comes to furniture.
And we can't put a price on that.
Yeah.
We cannot put a price on the sentiment that you have. The IRS doesn't care that it was grandma's. They just don't. So, and I you know, I really am not, I want everything to that people have to be valuable. I mean, we get just as excited about having a treasure as the person who owns it. So it's not as though we're out to belittle or to poke fun at somebody's belongings. But, you know, the stuff of everyday life is the stuff of everyday life. And we can't change that. And the fact that we have to sometimes go beyond the realm of what's the word I'm trying to say here, beyond the realm of just trying to give them information, sometimes we have to be a little bit more forceful and say, look, I'm sorry, it's just the condition is such, and the fact that it was mass produced in the 30s and 40s, it's just everyday used furniture. And that tends to hurt people sometimes, and it's not our intention, but it doesn't do any good for anyone to say that something is really valuable when it isn't, because we can't put a price on your feelings for that item. We can only put a price on the item in today's market.
You know, and another thing that goes on that, like with my mother's furniture, the furniture was 50 years old and in perfect shape. It had been recovered once, and the glass tables and end tables and long tables were in perfect shape. Now, if you've got something that's lasted for 50 years and is in perfect shape, why get rid of it? You can recover it. You can do different things with it. That's what my brother decided on. You know why? It's lasted 50 years. It's obviously going to last another 50.
Thank you for saying that, because that is so true. We part of our belief is that things should be repurposed and refurbished rather than end up in landfill. And I will tell you that the furniture, let's just take that for example, the furniture from the major furniture companies in the U.S. Some of them are still around, but a lot of them are gone. And that furniture that was made in the 20s, 30s, and 40s was very well made and very well reproduced from earlier periods, and it just lasts forever, and it's beautiful, it's saleable, but it's not valuable because that was the period of producing furniture for everyday folks that can't afford 18th and 19th century antique furniture. So they reproduced a lot of it in the teens, 20s, 30s, and 40s, and it's still around. And that table that came from your grandmother's house might not have a scratch on it, but it's just used furniture.
Yeah, my brother decided. It was the four of us plus my uncle and we all lived there, and he said if it could last that long with four kids, six or so, seven kids around it, then it's going to definitely last his lifetime and another lifetime after that. So
yeah,
it's an interesting thing to look at. All right, now how about this headline: a chicken heiress, an emerald ring, and the effort to help the Ukraine. Have you heard about this story?
No.
It's an emerald ring, and what they decided, that they found this in her Maryland home, and so she's 81 years old, and she said, you know what, let me take this, see what it's worth, and whatever it's worth, we'll donate the proceeds to a charity. Well, it turns out that it's worth now value between $50,000 and $70,000. And so it's going to go to auction, and that money is going to go to help the people in Ukraine. It's just a cool story.
It is a cool story. Now, those are the kind of stories that we should hear more of instead of what's been happening. That's really great. I wonder who's going to be selling it. We'll have to follow that. Is it an auction house here in the States? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Yeah, it is in the States, but I'm not sure which one it is. But I just thought, what a great story. You know, instead of thinking of herself first, she's 81, she just decided to put it to good use. And I just think that's spectacular.
Yeah. That's a hero. That's a hero in my eyes.
All right. Also, the Paul Allen Collection at Christie's, $1 billion worth of art. billion.
Yes.
It's becoming commonplace, isn't it? It's becoming like, oh, another $1 billion sale.
Amazing. I mean, is this the way the auction market's going to go now, where you build up and you're a good collector, obviously, and then you put it all together and it's worth $1 billion, 156 lots.
That's the thing that's the most remarkable to me.
Yes.
That's a pittance, a minimal amount of lots. In a way, it reminds me of when Tim was still working at Bertoia and they did the bank sale, and that was, what, 50 lots, and it brought in $2 million. I mean, a different asset, but I mean, still the quantity of items that were sold sold for such an exponential amount of money that it's similar, because when these things happen, that's not very many lots. So that if you average that out, how much that is per piece of art, that's a lot of money, a lot of money. And it's not going to it's only going to escalate. How long it's going to do that, no idea.
As someone who's an auctioneer, Tim, you know, it must take an enormous amount of time to verify and list and get it all together, $1 billion worth of items. Do you feel kind of weird when it goes in, like, in an hour, 2 or 3 hours?
Oh, well, yeah. you don't want to rush these things. When people are thinking about and contemplating, do I put my hand in the air? You want to give them ample time so that that you make sure that you're incorporating everyone's participation. That's really what it comes down to. And that's the hardest thing, as the auctioneer, is really reading the room, and especially with internet bidders, where you really can't see what they're doing on the internet, if they're going to jump in or not. I'm sure that for this major sale, they will have internet bidding, but I'm sure that they will have been vetted. You can't just sign up and then put your paddle in the air for some half, $500,000 piece of art without getting vetted and make sure that you are eligible to bid in the auction. But it does make it a lot easier, and it's a real art form as an auctioneer to be able to really have a sense or a feeling of, are we done, or is there one more left in the room?
You know, what's interesting here is, how do you feel as an auction company? You're the one that's picked to go in and see $1 billion worth of art, Ed.
It's the pinnacle of not only career, but also of looking at the works of art and say, you're not going to see anything, anything like this. I mean, there'll be other collections, there'll be other things of varying degrees, but this is when it comes to artwork, this is just a great collection because it's eclectic. It spans over 500 years of art and art styles and artists. So it's really a fascinating, fabulous collection.
You know, what's interesting about this story is they show pictures of art, just the pictures of the art, but then they show some of the art in a setting where it's displayed, and it's amazing. It's amazing what that setting does to that art. It brings it alive.
Yeah. And you can see that in the photographs. I'm looking at some of the photos from the gallery shots, and it's really just, they did a very nice job of putting that all together. But it's also, it speaks to the collection, because those pieces that span 500 years, these older pieces, they go well together. that's the other thing, is that you don't need to have, you know, 156 pieces by the same artist, or by, you know, the same thing, or the thing that's going to go with the couch or the sofa. It's when you look at all of these different styles and mediums, it just goes together well.
You know, you see around here, and just about every place in the country, you see people with metal detectors all the time going out. And some of the people are out there hoping to find that million. That's what they're out there. They want to find that $1 million item. There's other people that are out there with metal detectors that are just looking for historical items, maybe a certain type of coin that they want to see, maybe an artifact, or even something from the Civil War or whatever. They're doing it more as a collector. But how would you like to be this collector? He was just about finished for the day, you know, just hunting around, and all of a sudden the metal detector went off. What it turned out to be is a 2,000-year-old bull rider figure that was found in England, and it now will go under scrutiny, and they think that it's going to be, now it's not going to be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, but they think that it could sell for up to 10,000 to 15,000 pounds at auction. I guess, wow. You know, I think I would get excited if I found that out.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In South Florida, when those rare times that we do get to the beach, which we have to go more, but when we are there, we always will see someone going up and down the beach with their metal detector and their headphones on, and looking for some sort of treasure. And in our area in South Florida, it's one of the areas where a lot of old coins, because there were a lot of shipwrecks that took place there. So there's the opportunity for a lot of different things. But, you know, when you find something like that, again, people are doing it as kind of a hobby, but it's when you find and you stumble onto that lost treasure and rediscover it, that there's a thrill that goes through you. Even when we would walk the beach and I'd find a shark tooth or even just the beach glass, I'm like, oh my God, look, there is some fun to that.
You know, then we go to the other side of an auctioneer. A French auction house has been put on hold. They were going to auction off a royal bronze dragon seal, and the Vietnamese government stepped in and said, no, you can't do that. That's a part of our 19th century history, and they've stepped in and they want it back.
But that's a trend that we've talked about in the past, is Asian items that have been found or discovered, whether recently or if they've been in collections over the years, there's been a big repatriation surge over the past 10 to 15 years. And I don't know how they're going, if it's going to end up being a court battle. A lot of times they are, but I think eventually it'll probably end up going back there, and I think it rightfully should. I mean, it's part of a country's heritage, and I think it's important that those things should eventually make their way back to their home, if for no other reason, just the for the people of that country, that they have their history back. There was so much the reason that a lot of these things even exist outside the country is because they were not a lot of them were not taken legally. They were, you know, they were ransacked when they found digs, and no thought was given at the time when these things were found that they actually didn't belong to the country that decided to claim them. So, I mean, I think it's only right that they eventually end up at some point back where they belong.
you're looking back in history, even though a lot of these items were basically stolen, but I don't think every item was stolen. I think it was. Yeah. It's almost like today. If you go back 50 years, what was acceptable and what was not acceptable? Back in the days where they were actually finding these things, I do believe there was a noble intent at heart to save it so as many people can see it. But that doesn't change the fact that if it came from another country, that's where it really should be displayed and go to. They should have ownership of it.
I agree. I agree. So we'll see what we'll have to follow that and see what happens. But my feeling is that eventually the home country is going to have the advantage. That's my feeling.
Right. Because I think the public will get behind that as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, like I said, not everybody was a thief, but it doesn't matter what your intentions were or what the intentions were. Now, fact is fact. And it should, yeah, you can work a deal where it's a traveling display, but it should be in the country. And I have to mention this because it's an auction, Mark Smith Automobilia Auction, $600,000. That's one thing. But the thing that caught my eye, and this is the great thing about certain cars. There's a 1936 Packard coupe that went for $140,000. And you know what? You see a picture of these cars, and they're absolutely beautiful. They are pieces of art. When you look at these old cars, and when they're restored, and they're absolute pieces of art.
Yeah, I'm sure there is a surge also up by where you are, because there are a lot of collectors, I think, up in your area, in that whole area. But the earlier the car, the more, for me personally, the more a piece of art they are, especially if they are have been meticulously restored to their original look, you know, and all of the parts are correct, everything. But that's hard to do, but that's what I think makes them so valuable to me. But they are definitely something that they are a piece of art. The thing is, if you collect them, you've got to have a very big place to display them. That's the
space.
Only
Well, there's also a lot of design elements, especially those early from the 30s and 40s. You can see the different design elements and that's where the artistic appeal and the look comes from, especially when they're restored. But yeah, as Greg was saying, you need to have a lot of TLC and space to take care of these machines, because they do need to have to be looked after, and they have to be run, and you know, there's a lot of maintenance that goes into having a collection like this.
Well, so where do you go after you leave Ohio?
Ohio, back to Florida. Back to Florida. So I'll be in Florida and won't be traveling until after Thanksgiving. So we'll be set.
All right. Well, guys, we will speak to you next week. Have a great week.
Hey, thanks. You too.
That sounds good. Take care, buddy.
Take care, buddies. That is Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This here on Robin Hood Radio.